Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Welcome, everyone. It is Friday, October the 22nd, 2021. It is currently 5 p.m. Central Time. And once again, I'm sitting here in front of the microphone inside this empty sanctuary of Victory Baptist Church, the middle of nowhere, Texas. You know all of that. I've said it so many times now. Do I even need to say it in my introduction? I don't know. But welcome. Good afternoon. It's Friday. And if you listen to my last live broadcast, you know that I'm already a little discouraged and frustrated. I just get so sometimes tired of what's going on within the American church and the story that I have to talk about today, this afternoon in this live broadcast. It's even more discouraging, more frustrating. Right? And there's a lot of reasons for this. Let me just throw out a couple of things that just some random thoughts before we get to this story. Maybe you can relate to these thoughts. Maybe you think my thoughts are crazy. Maybe you cannot relate to them. But there's one thing I have discovered after all of these years of being a Christian. When it comes to Christians, it is absolutely fascinating and amazing that we can always make the Bible say whatever we want it to say, and even if it seems to go against something that we want to do, we will find a way to justify it, right? We can always find it. If we want to, we can gossip about someone and try to find a way to justify it, saying, well, I'm just letting people know so that they can pray for them. We'll find, and the Bible says to pray for other people. So see, and you can't pray for other people if you don't know what's going on, you know. So we always find a way. I mean, I could give all kinds of examples, but it's just absolutely fascinating what, you know, churches can justify pretty much anything they do. Pastors can justify anything they do. We just play games. We twist the scripture, manipulate the scripture, and we ultimately, Christians find a way in many cases to do exactly what they want to do and find biblical justification in order to do it. And at some point, you just have to say, are we just playing games or are we serious in any way, shape, or form? Maybe it's just my own frustration, but I've just watched it happen so many different times. It's really just sad at some point, but it's what happens. And I think it just is another piece of evidence that proves our depravity, that when we become saved, we don't just magically, the old nature just goes away. No, we are depraved sinners. And that self-centered, self-righteous pride, arrogance, and going to do things my way is just as alive and well in us as ever. And no matter how much we try to play it down, we're just denying the reality of it. And well, here we have a story. And let me just demonstrate. And let me just say this. There's some things in the Bible that I will agree can be very complicated and can be very difficult to understand. There are. There's plenty of them. I talk about that all the time. I believe the Bible can be a very complicated, very difficult book to interpret, to understand. There, you can have a passage where you can have 20, 30 different interpretations that have manifested themselves within church history. And that's very frustrating when you realize, well, oh, this passage, well, there's disagreement. This passage, there's disagreement. But there's some things that you think would just be somewhat relatively easy to understand, right? I think. You can tell me, do you believe this passage is complicated? Do you believe this passage is complicated? Let me just ask you. And I quote, dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to the law before the unjust and not before the saints? Do ye not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matter? Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If then you have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak to you your shame. It is so that there is not a wise man among you, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers? Now, this is 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 and following. Paul is writing to the church at Corinth and is like, what are you guys doing? Because they were suing one another. They were going basically to the civil law, the law of the unbelievers, in order to solve problems, to fix whatever issues they were have. And Paul is telling them, hey, as Christians, don't go before the unbelievers. Don't sue one another. Take it before the church and let the church judge that. Let the church draw a conclusion. Let the church come to a conclusion and settle the matter once and for all. That's what the Bible says. But you can look throughout Christianity and realize that's not always followed. Over and over and over. But you think there's one place it should be able to be followed, right? Let's just throw out in theory, okay, that you have individuals who are leaders in a denomination. Leaders in a denomination. And they find themselves at odds with one another. They have a denominational structure. Shouldn't they just take it before the denomination? Much less, now you could argue, well, if I go to one church and they go to another church, and we have a disagreement, then which church do we bring the matter before? Okay, I can understand that. You could get the two pastors together, and then you could have the two pastors then work to try to reconcile and come up with a solution. You could possibly do that. But I understand that there can be some difficulties in the situation. But if you have a denomination, there shouldn't be any difficulty. You have the entire denominational structure there. You just take it to the denomination. But does that always happen? Well, I've got a news story here that's going to demonstrate that maybe, well, I don't know what it's going to demonstrate. Let's just listen to it. I've got a news story here in print, but let's go to, this story is going to take us to the Southern Baptist Convention, the SBC. And so I just grabbed the podcast SBC This Week because, well, all they report is on things happening within the Southern Baptist Convention. So let's go to something connected with the SBC. For them to tell us what's going on, and then we'll talk about it. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of SBC This Week, a roundup of news and views from around the Southern Baptist Convention. SBC This Week is hosted by Amy Whitfield and Jonathan Howe.
Hey Jonathan, how's it going?
It's going good. I am in lovely Southern California, Amy.
Well, how is it there?
It's cool. It's always cool in Southern California, right? You know,
right.
Hip and cool, but it's also cool as in I didn't bring enough long sleeve shirts.
Well, that's unexpected.
I know. It's just about the same temperature as it is back in Nashville. And I was not expecting that. And it's a little chilly for me out here.
Okay.
So,
well,
but I'm okay. I'm okay.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you are getting to be there. I'm sure it is beautiful. Are you doing, is it a site visit?
Yes, working on some stuff for the annual meeting for next summer in June.
Okay.
We'll all be here in June in Anaheim. I'm currently here in Anaheim at the Marriott right next to the convention center. So did a lot of walking around this morning, checking out signage locations and just everything we need for all the signage and all that goes on with the annual meeting and just kind of wrapping that all up. So been working on that this last couple of days.
Now, before we get to the whole lawsuit matter, does it ever feel like when you hear all of the, you know, denominations, these large denominations where they have, you know, you vote for this person and they have all these positions and they have all the people who work for the denominations. You have all these, these different committees and they organize this and they have these big meetings and they have to have people who go there who plan the meetings. And then they have the convention halls and all of the, just all of that big, massive structure of denominationalism. Do you feel that just stops being anything even closely connected to the New Testament church? Do you think it just stops? I don't know. Just sometimes like, you know, so here's someone who obviously works for the Southern Baptist Convention. He's been sent to California, staying at the Marriott, been walking around. It's like, it's just so much money. And it just, I don't know. It just, sometimes it just doesn't feel like anything closely related to the Bible. But you can tell me your thoughts. All right, let's continue.
And now I got a college visit tomorrow, Amy, for my
oh,
oldest
really?
Son. That is crazy to me. So
okay, and is he out there with you too?
He's flying out tonight.
Okay.
So he and Beth are flying out today, and we're going to Cal Baptist tomorrow and very checking that exciting. Out because it looks like that's where he will be heading for college in just a few months, which is insane.
Yeah, I know. We're in that season as well, and it's kind of weird to imagine that we're there. Of course, we're a little different from you and Beth because emptiness is staring us right in the face, but you've got quite a bit of time before they're all in college. So
absolutely. So got quite a ways to go with Avery being in first grade. So we got, you know, a long ways to go, but we're getting started next year and we're excited about that. And also, if you are looking at college, this week is the last week for the preview day at Texas Baptist College. So today is a preview day over at Texas Baptist College. I know they've got another one coming up in the spring. So if you're interested in exploring everything a college has to offer, be sure to check out Texas Baptist College. You can visit the college and have a chance to check out the campus, meet the professors, talk to fellow students about their Texas Baptist College. And you can visit texasbaptist.com for more information about Texas Baptist College on the campus of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary there in Fort Worth. So,
okay, great. Yeah, we'll be talking about Southwestern a little bit later in the show. We've got a trustee meeting recap for them as well as others. So
all the seminaries. Yeah. All the seminaries. They all had their meetings this week and last. So we got all the seminary recaps in. We're going to be.
And again, the whole seminary structure, I'm not a fan of the seminary structure. I know people think I'm crazy, but I just don't get, hey, I'm in a local church. I feel called to ministry. Wonderful. Now go get your training. Go. And I'm like, no, the local church should train me. The local church should ordain me. The local church should send me. And the local church should help support the person so that they can go, well, whatever church, you know, they end up in, they don't have to worry about, I got to make this much money. Your local church would be helping to financially support you to extend the ministry of that local church and helping you with the church you're going to minister to. And you were trained and sent out by that church. I don't get the whole thing. You got these denominations. The denominations have seminaries that are a part of the denomination. They have colleges that are a part of the denomination. And then you find out in many cases the seminaries or the colleges are not even faithful to what the denomination teaches. But then nothing ever really happens. It just becomes money. It just becomes something. That's what I just sometimes when I listen to any programs that originate or are basically connected to a denomination, it just always sounds like something's like, I don't see any of that in the New Testament. I just don't see any of that. And it turns into this big, I hate to say it, business. Now, I'm not saying it becomes big business and big politics. And I just don't like, why does the local church abandon its responsibility to equip men for ministry? I don't understand. And why do we hand that over to seminaries? I don't know. But I'm trying to stay focused here. I'm trying. But I just want us to hear everything they have to say leading to the report that we're focused on here. I know you're like, just get to this. I just wanted to go through this because what's happening in this with this news story, just to me, it is connected with just denominations as well. And I'll have a whole discussion about that as well. Just stay with me.
Getting that here shortly, and we'll get to Southwesterns. But Amy, first we start in Nashville.
Yeah, so big story that dropped. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. A lot of times we record on Fridays, but schedule-wise, with you being in California, we're recording it today. So this dropped last night, and it was news. I was completely surprised by it. It was
same.
There was a lawsuit filed on Monday, and it was from former executive committee chair Mike Stone. He's still a current executive committee board member. And he has filed a lawsuit against former ERLC president Russell Moore. And in that, Mike Stone is alleging that he has suffered a tremendous loss in professional cultivation and reputational standing, decreased future earning power, and serious mental and emotional injury in the form of extreme public embarrassment, stress, anxiety, and fear. And that this was all due to the actions of Russell Moore. And he's really focusing in on a couple of letters that had been written. One had been written, I think, in early 2020. Another one had been written in May 2021, but they were both released publicly, leaked by sources that are still unknown. And it was just before the election for SBC president. So he is alleging that he was defamed by Russell Moore within those letters and that they were part of a malicious campaign against Mike Stone as retaliation for the ERLC task force that was part of the executive committee that went from basically February 2020 until February 2021 when that report was released. So this is really kind of a story that goes all the way back about a year and a half ago and has culminated in this lawsuit.
So I just want you to hear just all of the language. We got lawsuits. We got election for president. We have a leak. We don't know who did the leak. We've got, and it's just all of that. None of that sounds spiritual, biblical. It sounds political. It sounds worldly. It sounds fleshly. And that's what I can't, I guess I get bothered because there are those who are, because I'm a pastor of an independent church, they're like, well, you independent churches, you're just out there. You do whatever you want. There's no oversight. There's no accountability. And like, give me a break. And your denominations, you split, fight, argue, sue one another, whatever you, it's give me a break. I've got an article here about Reformed Churches of America, a very old denomination who's currently getting ready to have possibly splits and because of LGBTQ issues. And then you got the Methodist splitting. You can have all your denominational structure in the world saying you have accountability, but as soon as people don't want to do what the denomination doesn't want them to do, they just leave and go start another denomination. So what's the point of all of the accountability, supposedly, all of the structure, if people can just say, well, forget you, I'm just going to go do what I want to do. And or you try to get this person elected, you play politics. Okay, we're the liberals. We're going to try to get a liberal elected as president so we can take the denomination in a liberal way. And then the conservatives of the denomination are like, no, we're going to try to get a conservative. And it's just like politics and fighting and people trying to get position. And it's like, none of that seems scriptural in any way, shape, or form. So those are about a part of denomination. They always seem to be so like arrogant, like we know how to do it because we have accountability. You play political games to get your side power so that your side can then push forth its agenda while the other side then tries to find a way that they can regain power and then everyone's fighting. And then if sooner or later, if people don't do what they want, then you just split and go start another denomination. So, whoa, glad those denominations fixed all of the problems. It just seems like an absolute mess. And here we have a lawsuit. Again, 1 Corinthians 6 makes it very clear, don't do this, and we have this. So we have, I'll just go through the people involved in this. Mike Stone, the former chair of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee, has filed a defamation lawsuit against Russell Moore, the former president of the denomination's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, who stepped down this year. Now, it may be possible, and I didn't even think about this until I started listening to them, that Russell Moore, did he leave the SBC? I don't remember all of the SBC interworkings. So you could argue, well, Russell Moore is no longer a part of the SBC, so therefore the denomination can't do anything about this. You still think two men who claim to be Christians, and there isn't a denominational structure at least in place, they could at least bring their issues before the denomination and let the denomination figure out what to do. And then listen, even if you're not happy with the denomination's conclusion, at some point, you have to ask yourself, when do you cross the line over into violating 1 Corinthians chapter 6? But, you know, who cares? I mean, the Southern Baptist Convention have turned basically a blind eye to plagiarism in the pulpit. The Southern Baptist Convention clearly doesn't even care if your new president of the Southern Baptist Convention had a completely heretical definition of the Trinity on his church's website. You could just delete it and move on. Clearly, the Southern Baptist Convention has a major issue in how to handle sexual abuse issues. And so, you know, I guess why would 1 Corinthians 6 matter either? I don't know. But those are the individuals involved, Mike Stone and Russell Moore. Let's see what else they have to say here.
Dropping. So we'll have to keep you posted, see what develops out of it at this stage. It's just come out. Folks are processing all the things that are in it.
Absolutely. And if anything new happens in this case, we'll bring it to you here on the podcast. You can always follow along with these and all the stories that we mention here on the podcast at BaptistPress.com. Some other news from the
Don't you love that? Now, see, here... Okay, this is where I get a little frustrated. All right? Well, I've already frustrated, but this is where I even get more frustrated. Because I know how this game is played. I was on Christian radio, and I learned really quick that if you're on Christian radio, there's certain things you cannot criticize. There's some things you... It doesn't matter. A church can do this or a church can do that, but you can't call them out for what they're doing because no. Then the radio station could lose donations, so you've always got to say things in a certain way, so I got kicked off the air. Well, here... This is a podcast clearly entrenched with the Southern Baptist world. They can't raise any questions here. Like, hey, we know this lawsuit just got filed, but I think everyone should stop within the denomination and ask themselves, wait a minute, what about 1 Corinthians 6? They could have read 1 Corinthians 6, but no. They're just going to report the news and not offer any commentary. I understand that, but it just seems to me like, come on, let's at least... Look, you can do it in a non-accusatory way. You can do it still in a very news-oriented way and say, this is what's happened. We don't know a lot as of right now, but I think everyone initially from hearing the report would probably start asking them questions in regards to the words of the Apostle Paul to the church at Corinth, where we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and just read it. Even if you don't make commentary, you can at least bring it up, right? Maybe, I don't know, but here, I've got a story here that goes into a little bit more detail. They say this: Mike Stone, the former chair of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee, has filed a defamation lawsuit against Russell Moore, the former president of the denomination's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, who stepped down this year. Stone, who pastors the Emmanuel Baptist in Blackshear, Georgia, is suing Moore for claims of defamation, false light invasion of privacy, and emotional distress. Now, the way they reported it, he's also upset because of potential earnings in the future, right? So money comes into play as well. You got to bring in money too. All right, so now I'm just going to throw this out there. If you're a pastor and someone makes public accusations against you, and they hurt your chances of any future earnings, in other words, getting a job in other churches, can you sue them for defamation and for hurting you from making future money? Like, at what point, when can accusations be made and when does it cross the line? I mean, I guess, I don't know, just throwing out a theoretical there, all right? According to the Tennessean, lawyers for Stone filed a lawsuit Monday in U.S. District Court for Middle Tennessee. So again, please note, they're going to the U.S. District Court. They're not going to a church. They're not going to a denomination. This is going to, in a sense, the way Paul would describe it, a court of unbelievers. They're going to the unbelievers to resolve this dispute amongst professing Christians. Because as far as I know, Russell Moore professes to be a Christian. So does Mike Stone. Right, so I would assume that then there's a problem here. The complaint centers on leaked letters. Please note leaked. You gotta love this. Remember, you need denominations. You need denominations, right? Because these independent churches, no. Now I will tell you, you got problems in independent churches. You got problem in denominations. That's why I don't think anyone should ever be arrogant about that. Their form of ecclesiology is the way to go because, there's issues in all of them. But here we go. So we have leaks, the leaked letters written by Moore, who resigned as ERLC president in May. And the first letter from February 2020, leaked to Religion News Service in May, Moore alleged that the SBC executive committee wanted him to live in psychological terror and that he and his family had endured unfair treatment by denominational leaders. The letter came amid ERLC's promotion of racial justice initiatives and calls for the denomination to improve its handling of sexual abuse allegations. Another letter leaked to the media was written by Moore to then SBC President J.D. Greer in May, alleging that SBC leaders mishandled a crisis of sexual abuse. You and I both know leadership in the executive committee at the trustee level with Mike Stone and his allies, and at the staff level by former executive vice president Augie Bato, have stonewalled many attempts at reform for the sake of the sexually abused, Moore wrote in his letter. Now, I don't know if I'm saying Augie Bato correctly, but that's what it looks like. Stone, who had been a member of the SBC Executive Committee since 2014 and served as a chairman from June 2018 through June 2020, claims that Moore began a malicious, intentional, and egregious campaign to harm him by defaming him with the text of two letters strategically concealed from general distribution within the ERLC and the SBC. The leaders were leaked just weeks ahead of the SBC's 2021 annual meeting in June, where Stone ran for convention president. He subsequently lost to Alabama pastor Ed Litton. Just, you got leaks, you got political moves. It's, look, none of all of that is just as fleshly, worldly, and ungodly as anything going on in the world of secular governmental politics. It's the same nonsense. Stone, represented by Brentwood-based Cole Law Group, alleges that Moore's letters directly led to his loss, harmed his overall reputation, and diminished his future earning capacity. He is seeking, are you ready for this? $750,000 in damages. $750,000 in damages. Man, I need a lawsuit. I don't need $750,000. I just need $100,000. That's all I need. Then I can pay off my house, and then I'm set for the rest of my life. All I need is just to pay off my house. That's all I need. I need a GoFundMe page just to raise $100,000. That's all I need. Okay. But that's crazy. So money comes into play, obviously. Plaintiffs' business operations have been negatively impacted by defendants' untruthful statements due to a decreased trust and confidence in plaintiff and the religious community. And the plaintiff's pastoral efforts will undoubtedly suffer decreased church attendance and reduction in donations because of defendants' statements which are untruthful and have cast a plaintiff in a false light, the lawsuit alleges. So please know, it's about, he's not going to be able to, it's not, church attendance will go down, donations will go down. At the time Moore wrote his letter, the SBC Executive Committee, headed by Stone, had scrutinized the ERLC amid concerns from within the denomination about Moore's leadership. Some had threatened to withhold donations from the SBC Cooperative Program, which in part funds the commission. At the time, the task force also said its findings showed a considerable conversation continued in the SBC as to the effectiveness and efficiency of the ERLC's current structure addressing the public policy concerns. In the lawsuit, Stone claims that Moore's letters were retaliation to his role in chairing the study. Shortly after the release of the letters in June, Stone told the Christian Post that he did not recognize the SBC that Moore described and that he had mischaracterized Southern Baptist. The accusation that a special 2020 ERLC task force was about the task force action on my part is blatantly and provably false, Stone said. This attack is deflection from the fact that Russell's leadership of the ERLC has been an ongoing source of division and distraction for Southern Baptists. So what it sounds like, I hate to say this, it sounds like a bunch of children arguing and fighting that there were committees, and one committee didn't like what the other committee was doing, and one committee called out the other committee, and now the two men involved, well, are now one is suing the other because the one believes he's been hurt and he can't make as much money, and he's suffered emotional and psychological distress. I don't even know what to say. Here's what I will say. I cannot speak to, nor will I even pretend, to be an expert on the interworking political workings of the SBC. I think I have major issues with the whole denominational structure. I have a major issue with the SBC on countless levels, especially the way they handled Ed Litton's messed up definition of the Trinity. And nobody seems to care. And even the plagiarism thing was like a little, like a little, you know, ripple in the water for a couple of seconds, and then that went away. They didn't handle anything correctly. But now when it reaches a point where now lawsuits are being filed, I mean, 1 Corinthians 6, I mean, does 1 Corinthians 6 mean anything? There's going to be all kinds of people saying, well, it doesn't mean this, and it doesn't apply here, and it doesn't apply here, and it doesn't apply there. And sooner or later, you can make enough arguments that it doesn't apply, and it doesn't apply, that ultimately it doesn't apply to anyone, and it doesn't mean anything to anyone. And at that point, what is, then we just continue to play games like this. I'm reading some of the studies under this. Yeah. So, and now what's interesting is a whole lot of people here are mentioning 1 Corinthians 6. So, yeah. It's kind of interesting that you got the leaders not mentioning 1 Corinthians 6, but you got the average person mentioning 1 Corinthians 6, which just may demonstrate how messed up the Southern Baptist Convention is. I don't know. There was another article I read, like who can straighten out the SBC, you know, what can be done. And I don't know what to tell people. I don't know. I know that there's people who go to Southern Baptist churches. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if you can, your denomination is a mess, but there, you know how many denominations are currently in a mess? Plenty of them. So I know within the Southern Baptist denomination, each individual church is basically seen as autonomous. So in many cases, those churches really will say, well, we don't have anything to do with what the Southern Baptist Convention is doing. Then why are you a part of the Southern Baptist Convention? Why? Why? Now, some people say, well, for missions or for this or for that. I understand that. But if the denomination is a train wreck, then, you know, I don't know. The whole thing is just sad. The whole thing is just absolutely, it's sad, it's depressing, and it just once again shows that, I'll say this. This is probably how I want to end this. Because I'm really just struggling here with just like, I grow so tired of these kinds of things, but I just want you to listen to all of the language from the news article to what we heard. All of the language there, it just sounds so not New Testament Christianity. It's where Christianity grows into this large corporate, you know, business. It turns into this whole thing. It's a political business. It's a corporate political business. And you've got people vying for political control, political power, people trying to get position. They're trying to get influence. And at some point, the average Christian has to say, enough is enough of all of that. I'm tired of all of that. And I think that's why more and more Christians, I hate to say it, are going to leave churches and they're just going to be out there kind of the Lone Ranger Christian doing their own thing, because churches and denominations are just in a total disarray and a mess. I'm not saying all, but I'm saying many. I'll find it really quick. It'll take just a couple of seconds to find the news article just to show you what I mean. I want to do a podcast on this by itself, but just so that you'll understand what I'm referring to. Okay, here we go. Okay, there's something about Methodists. Okay, here's something here. All right, now can anyone lead the Southern Baptist Convention forward? Well, I don't believe that's ever going to happen. All right, here we go. Where is it? Let me see here if I can find more stories. All right, here we go. This was published October the 17th. Reformed Church in America moves towards restructuring, prepares for departures. The Reformed Church in America has voted to appoint a team to restructure the nearly 400-year-old denomination as it divides over LGBTQ ordination and same-sex marriage. The convention, which met Saturday in Tucson, Arizona, also adopted regulations for churches that have left the RCA to retain their assets and buildings. The restructuring plan and regulations for exiting churches called Vision 2020 passed by wide margins. So we have another denomination where there's going to be things falling apart and splitting and people leaving. We'll stated this. Dr. James Merritt, former president, is making a big deal of this and quoting 1 Corinthians 6. So that's at least one person. And that's good that one person is making a big deal about it. But you would think, I don't know what you can do. And Will may know, who's listening. Did Russell Moore leave the SBC? I don't know if he did. I don't know. Let me just look here. I'm going to type in Russell Moore. Okay, Russell Moore. Let's see here. Did he leave the Southern Baptist? Let's see here. Here's an article. Let me see here. Did he leave the SBC? I'm looking. Here's his. Okay. All right. Now, Russell Moore's vocal criticism of the then candidate Donald Trump during the 2016 election drew backlash from fellow Southern Baptists, triggering a crisis in which more than 100 churches threatened to withdraw donations to the denomination's cooperative program. I want you just to hear that. That's right there is just absolutely dumbfounding to me. So here's someone in the denomination who has criticisms over Donald Trump during the 2016 election season. And so churches, more than 100, threatened to withdraw donations to the denomination's cooperative program and protest of Moore's stances and leading to calls for his resignation. Because nobody should have criticized Donald Trump. There was nothing to criticize Donald Trump on. You don't do that. See, that if that's how denominations work, like, you know what? It's just, you better follow the company line. You better do what we tell you. Oh, man. Okay. And again, it's politics. After Moore issued statements of apology in December 2016 and March 2017 for using words that were at times overly broad and unnecessarily harsh, Southern Baptist leaders affirmed their support for his leadership, and he remained in his post. So he made everything. Okay, Will said it looks like that he did. All right, good. I was trying to verify this. All right, so it looks like he left the SBC. Now, if he left the SBC, that at least, again, I'm assuming he goes to a church somewhere. And so I'm assuming, unless he just dropped out of church, so I'm assuming he goes to a church somewhere. I'm assuming the other individual goes to is a part of a church. There should be, in other words, there should be religious leaders who should be able to get together and try to resolve the conflict. Even if the denomination cannot, well, the denomination should at least tell the one, put it this way, the one who is still a part of the SBC, can say, no, because if it appears correctly, in fact, let me go back, because now that I'm thinking about this, this would make an easy way, because the one, Mike Stone is suing Russell Moore. So it's someone who's a part of the Southern Baptist who's suing someone if Russell Moore has left the SBC. So the SBC could step in and go, hey, Mike Stone, no, you cannot do that. That's a violation of Scripture. You can't do that. So if you're going to continue that way, then you're going to have to face discipline from the SBC. But at this point, I don't think the SBC does. I don't even know what the SBC does. I say this every time I talk about the SBC. Their old denominational structure just is so confusing to me. But the SBC as a whole, I mean, Ed Litton is the president. Can he come out and say this is unacceptable and not right, and this should not move forward because it violates 1 Corinthians 6? I mean, couldn't he not? He may not be able to stop the lawsuit, but he could at least hold Mike Stone accountable for his violation of 1 Corinthians 6. And then Mike Stone could possibly withdraw the lawsuit, and then they could call then on Russell Moore or whoever, whatever church he's a part of. Hey, your member did these things. Something needs to be done. And if he is responsible for defamation, gossip, slander, or anything that hurt Mike Stone, then the church would get involved and have to carry out some form of church discipline. But if Russell Moore repents and says, I'm sorry, I was wrong, then you have to let it go. So, I mean, there still would have to be a scriptural way of handling this. But Mike Stone, being a part of the Southern Baptist can say something to him. If Russell Moore left, which I do believe he did, then then you contact his church, and then his church would conduct and handle it, whatever. And if his church is part of a denomination, then the Southern Baptist leaders contact the denomination Russell Moore is a part of, and then the two denominations work out how to handle these two individuals who are taking this before the world. And there still would have to be some mechanism. But if none of the leadership structures can even handle any of this, then what's the point of the leadership structure? And I know I say that as someone in an independent church. I know that. I understand. And trust me, I understand there's plenty of problems with the independent model. I understand it. I'm not saying that. Just think sometimes people are part of the denominational structure. They always criticize the independent churches. But there was no oversight. There was no structure. There was nothing. You know, these churches, these people just run rampant. They can do whatever they want. And like, and look at the denominations. Again, I just read you the article of the Reformed Church in America, 400-year-old denomination, and now you got people leaving and they're splitting and it's all falling apart. Well, why? Because once again, issues, disagreements, and it falls apart. Methodists, they're people leaving and all of the who gets the property. We're gonna sue to keep the property. We're gonna sue to get the property back. I mean, it just all turns into, you know, am I watching Christianity or am I watching Washington D.C.? And am I watching Christianity or am I watching, you know, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity program on Fox News? I mean, you know, what is it? And it stops looking like anything related to Christianity. It just listening even to the report from SBC this week, it just sounded like we got leaks and we got committees and we got fighting and we got arguing and we got, you know, trying to hurt me before the, you know, release these letters before the election. That's the nonsense that goes on in the world. And it's just, it's interesting. All of these things can take place and nothing ever really happens. No one's ever held accountable. Nothing occurs. But hey, it's amazing. Like what things are acceptable. Just, that's just the way it works. And nobody ever raises a question or few people raise a question. And then those things that are just deemed completely unacceptable and will be the end. This behavior is, for the most part, is going to be viewed as acceptable by many. Now, I'm glad that Dr. James Merritt is calling them out and that, you know, he's making a big deal, but what a lot of people, there were those who raised their voice about the plagiarism issue. There were very few of us raising the issues about the Trinitarian statement by Ed Litton. Nothing ever happens. Nothing's done because there's only certain sins that will get the attention. There were certain sins, then everybody gets mad, right? There's a lot of things you can do and nobody will raise, nobody cares. Now, once everything blows up and it gets ugly, right? Well, then you release a podcast, you know, called The Rise and Fall of Whatever. And then everyone will then criticize what happened. But at the time it was all going on, very few people were criticizing it. Yeah, I'm talking about The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill. It's just funny. A lot of things Mark Driscoll is getting torn apart for on the podcast were the very things that so many people loved about him when he was at the height of his popularity. But once the popularity goes away, then everybody's like, let me get in on my 15 minutes of beating him over the head and you know, kick him a couple of times. Now, don't get me wrong. You listen to some of those episodes of The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill. Man, some of his theology was so abhorrent and messed up at the time. I didn't even realize how bad his theology was at the time. He clearly was a mess theologically. So yes, there were issues, but I'm saying a lot of the things that made him popular are the things that he then are criticized for now because it's after the fact. And yeah, you take anything happening in any of these denominations, at the time, a lot of the things going on, people are like, okay, well, you know, it's just the way it is. But once the big scandal or something blows up, then, you know, after the fact, we're like, well, I knew there was a problem here and I knew it. Okay, well, it's a little late now, but sometimes that seems the way it works. It's just, I guess, you know, 1 Corinthians 6 can be violated. That's okay. That's okay. You can plagiarize. Hey, no big deal. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not going to, you can have a completely heretical definition of the Trinity. That's okay. But aren't we glad we have denominational structure to hold people accountable and resolve these very difficult, complicated issues? Aren't we glad we have these big, you know, buildings where these denominational headquarters are located that probably cost who knows how much to build or to rent or to utilize, with a staff of who knows how many people, with all of these departments and all of these committees doing all of these denominational things where millions of dollars go in and out through them. Aren't you glad we have those huge structures for to resolve all these difficult denominational issues? But it seems like the bigger the denomination comes and the more structure it has, it just creates more money that is needed to maintain them, more committees, more people, more positions where there's more politics at play. And then they never really stop the problems from happening because they still fall apart and split and people leave and or threaten to withhold money. That's always the go-to way. We'll threaten to withhold money. As long as you threaten to withhold money, that will get anyone's attention. And is that even biblical? Is that even the... I don't know. Like, if you're going to be a part of a denomination, but you're not going to send them money, then why be part of the... Like, you're going to withhold the money, then why even be a part of the denomination? Just leave the denomination. I don't know, though. Denominationalism just is mind-boggling to me. I don't get it. I understand that desire for structure. I understand that desire for accountability, but it just morphs into this big political monster that to me is just as problematic as the issues you're trying. Like, the system becomes to me as just as much of the problem as the things you're trying to fight against and trying to prevent. It's just, I don't know. I was in a Southern Baptist church as a young Christian, and I'd hear, you know, the talks about the convention and fighting about this and arguing about this, and this person is trying to get elected, and who are we going to vote for? And I would just hear all of that talk, and maybe that's what gave me a bad impression as a teenager. Just gave me a bad impression of, like, this is all about position and power, and it just felt so worldly. It didn't feel like what I thought Christianity was supposed to be. Maybe I'm just being naive. Maybe I'm foolish. Maybe I'm dumb. Maybe you say, well, that's not the way the real world works. I understand that. But man, can we have something in Christianity that's, I know it's always going to be corrupted by sin because I'm involved and you're involved. But can we, why do we always have to just seem like we follow everything? Everything's got to become like this corporate industry. Like, there's an industry that's built around it. It's like a corporate industrial idea with politics and maneuvering. And it just seems to me, it just loses any sense of spirituality. Maybe I'm just being completely naive. Maybe I'm just being completely naive, but I don't know. When you get into ministry, you find out, I am grateful that in some ways I've avoided a lot of, because I've heard horror stories about things happening in churches and past. Oh man, I've heard so many horror stories, and I don't have any horror stories to tell. I've only got one or two, maybe even things that would even be remotely like that was kind of messed up that someone did that to me. But for the most part, I've avoided. And a lot of the reasons I avoided it is because, well, I blew up that structure. We don't have business meetings in our church. Well, I know when the last time we have a business meeting. If there's some major decision, I bring it before the congregation and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. But we don't really do anything with money other than keep the lights on. We've tried to be very careful not to have any issues that required money other than, you know, when we redid the building. That was a big thing. But then there, the whole idea, we're not going to get in any debt. So we're not going to borrow any money, no matter how long it takes. But I was able to avoid a lot of this because I didn't get any money. I don't get a salary. I don't get anything. So that there's no real, you know, I had to worry about, oh, how am I going to get my next paycheck? How am I going to get my next paycheck? Now, it was also very negative because I was bivocational, which ultimately had massive negative impact on me, my family, and I made horrible. It was a bad, I'm not saying that was a good system, but I'm just saying that there's got to be a way for the church to operate in a way that seems more spiritual than so corporate, like a business, like a corporation. And I'm not saying I have the easy answer, because bivocational is very difficult for pastors to do that. I mean, it can destroy you. It can. But, you know, I mean, like now, I mean, my church makes my house payment. That's wonderful. Wish I didn't have a house payment, then the church wouldn't even have to pay. That would be wonderful. And then I wouldn't have to worry about, you know, okay, I got to make sure, you know, I can get my house paid off because, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do without that. Because if the church wasn't making my house payment, I'd have to be bivocational. That would be the end of, and I wouldn't be able to do the podcast and be bivocational because I can never go back to doing that like I did before. So, there's just so many things. Like, I guess the more committees, the more things your church does, the more people are involved, the more positions. And it just seems like it just starts turning into something that it's not. I know I'm just kind of rambling now, but I just always try to just, I don't know. It just, when I hear about leaks and elections and it just sounds so like, what is that? It just feels to me not like the church. It feels like something alien, something other than it. I always envision the church as something like just a group of people coming together for the preaching of God's word, prayer, praise, participation in the ordinances. That's it. And I understand money gets involved, but you want to just keep it always as simple as you can. It just simple, like, you know, like just keep it simple. But I don't know. I don't know. Some of you're a part of big churches and you know that it's not simple. And maybe you're just thinking, man, he's an idiot. And probably I am being an idiot, but there's got to be some way to stop it. But when you get these big churches with these massive budgets, I don't even understand. Like, it just seems like it turns into something other than. I'm not saying that it can't be a good church. It just seems like it just turns into all these other things. And I don't know exactly where's that line when it crosses over. I know these huge denominations. I mean, I think the Southern Baptist headquarters, I mean, just look at that and all the people employed and all the groups and committees and organizations. And they got, you know, this department that focuses on this and then this department focuses on this. And it's just like, how many people do they employ? It just turns into like, is that the New Testament church Jesus spoke of or Paul spoke of or you know, but even those churches had their problems. So I don't know. Maybe I'm looking for something that can never exist. Maybe that's the problem. And maybe it was never going to be perfect, obviously, because all the churches in the Bible had problems. So maybe there is no perfect way. It just seems sometimes it just turns into something that just makes me wish it didn't exist, if that makes any sense. I don't know. But that's what's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention. I guess they go to court. If they don't settle out of court, someone is going to be held responsible. I guess maybe have to pay $750,000. Maybe that's the way it goes. And then what? Everybody just moves on. Let's say Moore is found guilty, and then he's now responsible for paying $750,000. I don't know how he pays that, whatever. Maybe he has the money, he pays it. Does everybody just go their own way and it's just forgotten? Do they find a way to settle out of court? And if they settle out of court, is that a good thing? I guess it's a good thing because it won't be all over the news, but it still required the world to bring some form of resolution and not the church. So it still seems just broken. I don't know. I'll stop right there. Yeah, you can just hear my voice. I'm just kind of like, what in the world? What in the world? I don't know. You can email me and tell me how wrong I am about everything. And I understand that. I just want you to understand. I'm just trying to express feeling there. I'm not trying to express dogmatic. I'm not trying to express dogmatic conclusions about denominations and churches and just everything that we see. I mean, just expressing my emotion and feelings about just all of this stuff that I've seen and seen and seen and being a Christian for so long. And sometimes you just become very frustrated with it all and tired of it all. And it's just sad that it happens over and over and over again. But you can email me and tell me where I'm all wrong. newsif@yahoo.com. newsif@yahoo.com. All right, I'll stop right there. Everyone have a good evening. God bless.